voice calling out across the parking lot. Turning, I watch as he carefully makes his way through the slush and the ice and comes to a stop in front of me. He didn't bother to put on his coat before following me outside and shivers against the cold.
Are you sure you're okay?
I'm not great, honestly, but I'll be fine, I think.
Do you want me to come back to your place with you?
No. I wince, hoping he knows this came out more abruptly than I intended. Attempting to tamp down my anger, I take a deep breath and give him a very wobbly smile. This isn't his fault. I need to talk to Amy. I need to think and make some sense of how Dane had the balls to say something like that to me with his brother just feet away. I need to figure out what the hell I'm going to do for a job, immediately. I scrape the toe of my boot against a patch of ice. I think I just need to go home and freak out a little on my own. Ethan tilts his head, gaze roaming my face deliberately.
Okay, but if you need me to come over, just text.
I will. I pull my lips between my teeth, resisting the urge to tell him to come with me and be my sounding board. But I know that won't work. I'll be terrible company tonight, but it's still going to be weird sleeping alone in my own bed. You've ruined me. I can tell he likes this. He takes a step forward and bends to kiss me, deepening it gently, a tiny, sweet taste. When he pulls back, he runs a finger across my forehead. He's so sweet. It started snowing again, and the flakes flutter down to land on his shoulders, the back of his hand, the tips of his lashes.
You left really suddenly, he says,
and I'm not surprised that he can't let it go. I'm acting like a maniac.
What happened when I was in the bathroom?
I take a deep breath and slowly blow it out. Dane said something kind of shitty. Ethan leans the tiniest bit away from me. It's such a subtle gesture, I wonder if he even notices that he did it.
What did he say?
Why don't we talk about this later? I ask. It's freezing.
You can't just say something like that and then call a rain check.
He reaches for my hand, but doesn't squeeze it in his.
What happened?
I tuck my chin into my coat, wishing I could disappear into it entirely, like a portable blanket fort. He hit on me. A blast of wind whips across the front of the building, ruffling the front of Ethan's hair. He's looking at me so intently he doesn't even wince at the cold.
What do you mean? Like...
He frowns.
Like touched you?
No. I shake my head. He suggested Amy and I trade brothers for a little fun. I have the urge to laugh, because saying it out loud makes it sound completely ridiculous. Who the hell does that? Who hits on his brother's girlfriend, who is also his wife's sister? When Ethan doesn't say anything, I repeat it more slowly. He wanted me to let him know if we ever wanted to mix it up, Ethan. A beat of silence. Two. And then Ethan's expression turns quizzical.
Mix it up doesn't necessarily mean, like, trade partners.
Stay calm, Olive. I give him a meaningful stare and count to 10 in my head. Yeah, it does. His expression straightens again, and a hint of protectiveness creeps into his voice.
Okay. Granted, his sense of humor isn't always appropriate, but Dane wouldn't.
I realize this is shocking on a number of levels, but I do know what someone hitting on me looks like. He steps away, clearly frustrated. With me?
I know Dane is immature sometimes, and sort of self-centered, but he wouldn't do that.
Just like he wouldn't lie to Amy for God knows how long while he banged whoever he wanted? Even in the dim light, I can see Ethan's face has turned a deep red.
I thought we agreed that we don't know the situation there. It's possible Amy already knows. Well, have you asked him? Why would I?
He says, hands waving in front of him, like what I'm suggesting isn't just unnecessary, it's preposterous.
Olive, we agreed to let that go.
That was before he propositioned me while you were in the bathroom. I stare at him, willing him to have some kind of reaction to this, but he's just closed up on me, his face unreadable.
Have you considered that you've put him on some kind of pedestal? Though for the life of me, I can't understand why, and are incapable of seeing he's a total sleaze?
Ethan flinches, and now I feel bad. Dane is his brother. My instinct is to apologize, but the words are stuck in my throat, blocked by the enormous relief of finally saying what I think.
Have you considered you're seeing what you want to see?
I straighten.
What is that supposed to mean? That I want Dane to hit on me?
He's shaking, and I'm not sure if it's from cold or anger.
It means that maybe you're pissed off about losing your job, and you're in the habit of being bitter about everything Amy has that you don't, and you're not objective about any of this.
This feels like a physical punch to my stomach, and I take an instinctive step back. Flames on the side of my face. His shoulders fall immediately.
Shit, I didn't mean...
Yes, you did. I turn around and keep walking to my car. His footsteps follow across the salted asphalt.
Olive, wait. Come on, don't just walk away.
I pull out my keys and fling open the door with so much force, the hinges groan in protest.
Olive, just...
I slam the door and with shaking hands and numb fingers, jam my key into the ignition. His words are drowned out by the sound of the engine struggling to turn over. Finally it catches, and I shift into reverse, backing up. He walks alongside me, hand on the roof of the car as he pleads for my attention. It's so cold I can see my breath in front of my face, but I don't feel a thing. My ears are full of static. He watches me leave, and in my rearview mirror I see him grow smaller and smaller. We have never been so far from that mountaintop in Maui. The drive home is a blur. I alternate between being mad at myself for all of this, terrified about my future income, furious at Dane, sad and disappointed over Ethan, and absolutely heartbroken for Amy. It's not enough to hope that Dane will turn over a new leaf now that he's married. He is a bad guy, and my sister has no idea. I try not to be dramatic and overthink what Ethan said. I try to give him the benefit of the doubt and imagine how I'd feel if someone accused Amy of doing this. I don't even have to think about it. I'd do anything for my sister. And that's when it hits me. I remember Dane's smiling face at the airport, and my shock today that he would hit on me with his own brother just a few feet away. Dane's confidence in both cases isn't about me or my ability to keep his secret. It was about Ethan and his inability to believe his brother would intentionally do anything bad. Ethan is his ride or die. I consider going to Amy's to wait for her, but if Amy was planning to meet us all at the restaurant, she won't be there anyway. They'd come home together later, too. I certainly don't want to be there when Dane gets back. I didn't think it was possible, but my mood plummets even more when I pull into my parking lot. Not only is my mom's car there, and parked in my covered space, but so are Diego's and my cousin Natalia's, which means Tia Maria is probably here as well. Of course. With my car parked on the other side of the complex, I trudge through the slush and up the stairs to my apartment. I can already hear Tia Maria's braying laugh. She is my mother's sister and the one closest to her in age, but the two of them could not be more different. Mom is polished and fussy. Tia Maria is casual and laughs constantly. And whereas Mom has only me and Amy, apparently having twins was plenty for her, Tia Maria has 7 kids, each neatly spaced 18 months apart. It wasn't until I was in the 5th grade that I realized not everyone has 19 first cousins. Although our nuclear family is relatively small compared to the rest of the Torres and Gonzalez crew, a stranger would never know that only four of us lived in our house when I was growing up, because at least two other people were always there. Birthdays were enormous affairs, Sunday dinners routinely had 30 people at the table, and there was never any place to sulk alone. Apparently not much has changed.
"I'm pretty sure she's a lesbian,"
Tia Maria is saying as I close the door behind me. She looks up at the sound and points to Natalia.
"Tell her, Olive."
I unwind my scarf from around my neck and stomp the snow from my boots. After the slushy walk through the parking lot, my patience is already thin.
"Who are we talking about?"
Tia Maria is standing at the kitchen counter, chopping tomatoes.
"Jimena."
Jimena, the youngest daughter of Mom and Tia Maria's oldest brother, Tio Omar.
"She's not a lesbian," I say.
"She's dating that guy. What's his name?" I look at Natalia, who tells them.
"Boston,"
I snap, pointing.
"That's right. God, what a terrible name."
"It's what you name your dog," Natalia agrees. "Not your kid." I shrug off my coat and toss it over the back of the couch. Mom immediately steps away from the dough she's rolling and crosses the room to pointedly hang it up. Stopping in front of me, she pushes my damp hair off my forehead.
"You look terrible, Mija."
She turns my face from side to side.
"Eat something."
Kissing my cheek, she heads back into the kitchen. I follow, smiling gratefully when Natalia sets a cup of tea down in front of me. For as much as I complain about my family always being in my business, having them here is admittedly pretty great. But this also means I can't avoid telling Mom that I was fired.
"A haircut doesn't mean someone's gay, Mom," Natalia says.
Tia Maria looks up at her incredulously.
"Have you seen it? It's all short on the sides and blue on top. She did it right after..."
She drops her voice to a whisper.
"The wedding."
Both Mom and Tia Maria make the sign of the cross.
"Why would you even care if she's gay?"
Natalia motions to where Diego is watching TV on my couch.
"Diego is gay, and you don't care about that."
At the sound of his name, he turns to face us.
"Diego came out of the womb gay,"
Tia Maria says, and then turns to him.
"I swear you had copies of Vogue under your mattress, instead of dirty magazines."
"Nobody gets porn from magazines anymore, Mom," Natalia says. Tia Maria ignores her.
"I don't care if she's gay. I just think we should all know so we can find her a nice girl."
"She's not gay," Diego says.
"Then why did I find a dildo in her sock drawer?"
Tia Maria asks the room. Diego groans and pulls a pillow over his face.
"Here we go."
Natalia turns to face her mother.
"She's 33. What were you doing in her sock drawer?"
Tia Maria shrugs as if this information is irrelevant to the story.
"Organizing. It was purple and huge with a little..."
She moves her finger in front of her to indicate what she means.
"Wiggly thing on one side."
Natalia presses her hand to her mouth to stifle a laugh, and I take a sip of my tea. It tastes like sadness and hot water. My mom stops chopping and sets down her knife.
"Why would that mean she's a lesbian?"
Tia Maria blinks at her.
"Because lesbians use those strap-on things."
"Mom, stop," Natalia says. "Lots of people have vibrators. I have a whole box full of them." She waves in my direction.
"You should see Olive's collection."
"Thanks, Nat."
My mom picks up a glass of wine and takes a large gulp.
"It seems smart to be a lesbian right now. Men are awful."
She is not wrong. I lean a casual hip against the counter.
"So, why are you guys cooking at my apartment?"
I ask. "And when are you going home?" Natalia turns off the stove and moves her pot to an empty burner.
"Your dad needed some stuff at the house."
That's it. That's her entire answer. And in this family, it's plenty.
Dad rarely goes to the house. He lives alone in a condo near Lake Harriet. But when he does visit, my mom evacuates the premises immediately. The rare times she feels spunky enough to stick around, she'll commit some pretty petty sabotage. Once she pulled out his collection of vinyl records and used them as trivets and coasters. Another time, when he stopped by before a week-long business trip, she put a whole fresh trout under one of the seats in his car, and he didn't find it until he got home. It was in August.
I wish I'd been born a lesbian, Mom says.
Then you wouldn't have me, I counter. She pats my cheek.
That's okay.
I meet Natalia's eyes over the top of my mug and fight the laugh that is bubbling up inside me. I worry that if it escapes, it could turn into hysterical cackles that would immediately transition into choking sobs.
What's with you?
Tia Maria asks, and it takes me a moment to realize she's talking to me.
She's probably tired from her new boyfriend,
Natalia sings and does a little sexy dance back over to the stove.
I'm surprised he wasn't with you. We only came in because his car wasn't out front.
God knows what we'll see. They all spin out of control about me and Ethan for a few minutes.
Finally, se te va paso el tren.
So perfect, so funny, because they hated each other.
Twins dating brothers. Is that even legal?
Before I'm able to get them back into orbit. Diego walks into the kitchen and burns himself sneaking something from the frying pan.
I'm not sure we're still a thing, I warn them.
Maybe we are. We had a fight. I don't even know.
Everyone gasps, and a small, disassociated piece of me wants to laugh. It's not like Ethan and I have been together for years. My family just gets so immediately invested. But then again, so did I. I can't think about things with us being over. It pushes a spike of pain through me. And wow, did I kill the mood. I debate for about 3 seconds whether I'm going to bother telling them that I also lost my job, but I know I am. If Dane tells Amy, and then Amy talks to one of my cousins, and Mom finds out that I got fired and didn't tell her, she will call all of her siblings, and before I know it, I will have 40 text messages from my aunts and uncles, all demanding that I call my mother immediately. Facing it now is going to be terrible, but it's still infinitely easier than the alternative.
Also, I say, wincing, I lost my job.
Silence swallows us all. Slowly, very slowly, Mom puts down her glass of wine, and Tia Maria picks it up.
You lost your job?
Cautious relief takes over her face when she says,
You mean the butaki job?
No, Mami. The one I started today. Everyone gasps, and Diego comes up, wrapping his arms around me.
No, he whispers. Seriously?
I nod. Seriously. Tia Maria takes my hand and then glances at Mom and Natalia, eyes wide. Her expression screams, It is taking everything in me to not call everyone in the family right now. But Mom's focus on me remains intense. It's the protective mama bear expression that tells me she's ready to battle.
Who fired my daughter on her first day of work?
The founder of the company, actually. And before she can unleash a tirade about the grave injustice of all this, I explain what happened. She sits down on a bar stool and shakes her head.
This isn't fair. You were in an impossible situation.
I shrug. I mean, it's actually totally fair. I got a free vacation. I didn't have to lie about it. It's just my luck he showed up, and I got caught. Natalia rounds the counter to hug me, and I'm swallowing every few seconds just to keep from crying, because the last thing I want is for Mom to worry about me, when, although she doesn't know it, she's going to need to save all her maternal sympathy for Amy.
Call your father, Mom says. Have him give you some money.
Mommy, I'm not going to ask Dad for money.
but Mom is already looking at Natalia, who picks up her phone to text my father on my behalf.
Let me talk to David, Tia Maria says, referring to Tio Omar and Tia Silvia's oldest son, the owner of a pair of popular restaurants in the cities. I bet he has a position for you.
There are some benefits to having an enormous family. You're never on your own to solve a problem. I don't even care if David would have me washing dishes. The prospect of a job is such a huge relief, I feel like I'm melting. Thank you, Tia. Mom gives her sister a look.
Olive has a PhD in biology. You want her to be a waitress?
Tia Maria throws her hands up.
You're going to look down your nose at a job? Where's her rent going to come from?
No one in this family is too good for any job that helps us pay our bills. I step between them, kissing Tia Maria's cheek and then Mom's. I appreciate any help I can get. After Bataki, I applied for all the local jobs I'm qualified for anyway, and only Hamilton offered me a position. Right now, I'm so exhausted, I'm not feeling picky. Tell David I'll call him tomorrow, okay? At this point in the day, I'm running on fumes. With at least one stress settled, the prospect of a job, my body deflates, and all at once, I feel like I could fall asleep standing. Although the food they're making smells amazing, I know I'll have a fridge full of it tomorrow, and I'm not at all hungry right now. I throw a mumbled goodnight to them, and no one argues when I shuffle down the hall to my bedroom. Flopping on my bed, I look at my phone. I have a couple of texts from Ethan I'll read tomorrow, but I open my messages with Amy. She texted me about an hour ago. Holy shit, Ollie. Dane told me about your job. I just tried to call you. I'll call you tomorrow. Okay, sweetie. Love you. Love you too. Dreading the conversation that I'm going to have with my sister tomorrow, I drop my phone onto my bedside table and pull the comforter over my head without bothering to get undressed. I close my eyes and fall into a restless sleep to the sounds of my family in the next room. Chapter 17. Because the early bird gets the worm or whatever, Amy is at my door before the sun is even fully up. She's clearly already gone to the gym, all swinging ponytail and dewy complexion. She sets a bag with a set of clean scrubs on the back of the couch, which means she's heading to the hospital from here. If the bounce in her step is anything to go by, Dane hasn't said a word about last night. In comparison, and we are nothing if not consistently on brand, I'm tired, not yet caffeinated, and I'm sure it shows. I barely slept last night, stressing over paying rent, what I need to say to Amy this morning, and what will happen with Ethan when we finally talk about all of this. I have no plans for today or tomorrow, which is a good thing, considering I need to call David and beg for a job. Once I opened Ethan's texts from last night, I saw there were only two, and they said simply, "Call me," and "headed to bed, but let's talk tomorrow." Part of me is glad he didn't bother trying to apologize in texts, because I'm not a huge texter. And another part is mad he didn't even try. I know I need some distance until I talk to Amy, but I've also grown so used to having near constant contact with Ethan, and I miss him. I want him to chase me a little, since I'm not the one who messed up here. Amy comes inside, embraces me tightly, and then bounds into the kitchen for a glass of water.
Are you, like, totally freaking out?
I'm sure she means the job situation, so when I say, yes, she really has no idea the scope of my anxiety right now. I watch her take down half the glass in a long gulp. Coming up for air, she says,
"Mom says David is going to hire you at one of his restaurants? That's awesome. Oh my God, Ollie, I can come in on the slow nights, and it'll be just like when we were kids. I can help with the job search, or your resume, whatever."
Shrugging, I tell her, "That'd be great. I haven't had time to call him yet, but I will." Amy gives me a look that is half amused, half bewildered, that I seem to have forgotten how our family operates.
Tia Maria called Tio Omar, and Tio Omar got in touch with David, and you're all set.
I laugh. Oh, my God. She swallows, nodding.
Apparently he has a waitress position at Camellia for you.
Huh. His nicest restaurant. I love my family.
Cool.
This makes Amy laugh in her disbelieving, oh, Olive, way.
Cool?
Sorry, I say. I swear, I am so emotionally wrecked, I can't even get it up to be excited right now. I promise to do better when I talk to David later. She sets her glass down.
My poor Ollie. Is your stomach feeling better?
My stomach?
Dane said you weren't feeling well.
Oh, I bet he did. And funny thing, as soon as she mentions Dane, my stomach does roll over. Right. Yeah, I'm okay.
Amy tilts her head for me to follow her as she carries her water into the living room and sits on the couch, legs crossed in front of her. Ethan ended up leaving early, too.
She must note the look of surprise on my face because she raises a brow.
You didn't know?
I haven't talked to him since I left. I lower myself down beside her.
Like, at all?
I take a breath. I wanted to talk to you first. She frowns, confused.
To me? Is this about how weird he was being?
No, I... What do you mean?
He was just really quiet. And about 20 minutes after I got there, he said he was going to head out. Dane said he probably had the same bug you had.
I clench my hands into fists and then imagine what it would be like to slam one of them into Dane's smug face. Actually, I wanted to talk to you about Dane.
Dane?
Yeah. He... I pause, trying to figure out where to begin. I have gone through this conversation 1,000 times, but I still don't have the right words.
Do you remember when Ethan and I first met?
Amy purses her lips together as she thinks back.
At some picnic or something?
The state fair. Pretty soon after you and Dane started dating. Apparently Ethan thought I was cute, and when he mentioned to Dane that he wanted to ask me out, Dane told him not to bother.
Wait, Ethan wanted to ask you out? How did he go from that to hating your guts, all in one day?
You know, I thought it was because he saw me eating cheese curds. God, saying it aloud now is mortifying. It sounds so dumb. I know Amy always understood why I thought this. We've both always struggled with our curvy genes, and objectively the world treats thin women differently. But I know now that this is my red button. I guess he was distant because he was trying not to flirt with me. Amy laughs like this is a silly joke.
Dane wouldn't say that, honey. He's always hated that you two couldn't get along. He was genuinely so happy when he saw you two at the airport.
Really? I ask. Or is he just saying that because it's what we all want to hear? I stand from the couch and move to sit on the coffee table in front of her. I take her hand in mine. Our hands are similar in so many ways, but Amy has a glittering diamond on her ring finger. I think, I say, still focused on our entwined fingers. This is so hard to say, even to the person I know best in the whole world. I think Dane wanted to keep me and Ethan apart, because he didn't want Ethan to let it slip that Dane was seeing other women when you were first together. Amy jerks her hand away like she's been shocked.
Olive, that's not funny. Why would you say that?
Listen to me. I don't know the exact dates, but Ethan said something in Maui about you and Dane not being exclusive until right before the engagement.
Ethan said that? Why would he?
He assumed you knew. But you and Dane were exclusive the whole time, right?
Of course we were.
I already knew this, but I'm hit with a spike of vindication nonetheless. I know my sister. She stands and walks to the other side of the room. Amy is no longer bouncy and post-workout giddy. She's quiet, brow furrowed. My sister fidgets when she's anxious, and right now she's tugging on her ring, absently spinning it around her finger. Being a twin means oftentimes feeling responsible for the other's emotional well-being, and right now all I want is to take it all back, pretend I'm joking and travel back to a time when I knew none of this. But I can't. I may never know what my ideal relationship looks like, but I do know that Amy deserves to be enough for someone, to be loved completely. I have to keep going. All the trips they took? Dane let you think they were Ethan's idea, that Ethan had planned them.
They were Ethan's idea. Like, objectively, she says. Dane wouldn't plan that kind of thing without talking to me first. Ethan plans stuff to get over Sophie, and because he's single, or was, she lets out a weird, surprised snort. He just assumed that Dane was free for all the holidays, too.
Most of these trips were before Sophie, or during. I watch her look for more reasons to explain all this away, and say, "Look, I understand why that's what Dane wanted you to think." I wait until she meets my eyes, hoping she sees that I'm being sincere. It looks better for him if Ethan is the one who is constantly dragging Dane around the world on these crazy adventures. But Amy, Ethan hates to fly. You should have seen him on the plane to Maui. He could barely keep it together. He gets seasick, too. And seriously, he's such a homebody, like me. I honestly can't imagine Ethan planning a surfing trip to Nicaragua now. Like, the idea makes me laugh. Dane was using Ethan as an excuse to go do stuff and to see other women. There's at least one other woman that Ethan mentioned.
"Where the fuck is your tinfoil hat, you psycho?" Amy growls. "I'm supposed to believe that my husband is manipulative? That he's been cheating on me for, what, 3 years? Do you really hate him that much?"
"I don't hate him, Amy. At least, I didn't."
"Do you have any idea how ridiculous this all sounds? Do you have anyone's word besides Ethan's to go by?"
"I do. Because Dane hit on me last night. At the bar." She blinks several times.
"I'm sorry. What?"
I explain what happened, about Ethan going to the bathroom, and Dane suggesting we could all swing if the mood happened to strike. I watch as my sister's face, so like my own, goes from confusion to hurt to something bordering on rage.
"Holy shit, Olive," she gapes at me. "Why are you like this? Why are you so cynical about everything?"
She picks up her glass and walks to the sink. Her face is so tight and bleak she looks sick again, and my stomach lurches in guilt.
"Why do you always want to see the worst in people?"
I don't even know what to say. I am struck completely mute. In the silence, Amy turns on the water with an aggressive jerk and starts washing out her glass.
"Like, are you serious right now? Dane wouldn't hit on you. You don't have to like him, but you don't get to always assume his intentions are terrible either."
I follow her into the kitchen, looking on as she rinses her glass before filling it with soap and washing it all over again. "Sweetie, I promise you, I don't want to think the worst of him." She slams the faucet off and whirls to face me.
"Did you tell any of this to Ethan?"
I nod slowly. "Right before I left. He followed me outside."
"And?"
"And," her expression clears.
"Is that why you haven't talked?"
"He wants to believe his brother is a good guy."
"Yeah, I know the feeling."
The seconds tick by, and I don't know what more I can say to convince her. "I'm sorry, Amy. I don't know what else to say to make you believe me. I never wanted..."
"Never wanted what?"
to ruin things between Dane and me? Between you and Ethan? That lasted what? She laughs sharply. 2 whole weeks. You're always so happy to believe everything just happens to you. My life has turned out the way it has because I'm so unlucky, she says, mimicking me in a dramatically saccharine voice. Bad things happen to poor Olive, and good things happen to Amy because she's lucky, not because she's earned them. Her words carry the vague echo of Ethan's, and I'm suddenly angry. Wow. I take a step back. You think I wanted this to happen?
I think it's easier for you to believe that when things don't go your way, it's not because of something you did. It's because you're a pawn in some cosmic game of chance. But newsflash, Olive, you end up unemployed and alone because of the choices you make. You've always been this way.
She stares at me, clearly exasperated.
Why try when the universe has already decided that you'll fail? Why put any effort into relationships when you already know you're unlucky in love and they'll end in disaster? Over and over, like a broken record, you never actually try.
My face is hot, and I stand there blinking, mouth open and ready to respond, but absolutely nothing comes out. Amy and I argue sometimes. That's just what siblings do. But is this what she really thinks of me? She thinks I don't try? She thinks I'm going to end up unemployed and alone, and that view of me is only coming out now? She grabs her things and moves toward the door.
I have to go to work, she says, fumbling to slip the strap over her shoulder. Some of us actually have things to do.
Ouch. I step forward, reaching out to stop her. Amy, seriously, don't just leave in the middle of this.
I can't be here. I have to think, and I can't do that with you around. I can't even look at you right now.
She pushes past me. The door opens and then slams shut again, and for the first time since all this started, I cry. Chapter 18. The worst thing about crises is they can't be ignored. I can't just walk back to bed and crawl under the covers and sleep for the next month, because at 8 in the morning, only an hour after Amy leaves, Tia Maria texts me to let me know I have to go down to Camellia and talk to David about the waitressing job. David is 10 years older than I am, but has a boyish face and a playful smile that helps distract me from the throbbing background impulse to pull all my hair out and fall kicking and screaming to the floor. I've been in Camellia about 100 times, but seeing it from the perspective of an employee is surreal. He shows me my uniform, where the schedule is taped to the wall in the kitchen, how the flow of traffic moves through the kitchen, and where the staff meets for dinner before the restaurant opens each night. I have years of waitressing under my belt. All of us do. Many of them at one of my cousin David's restaurants, but never at a place this classy. I'll need to wear black pants and a starched white shirt, with the simple white apron around my waist. I'll need to memorize the ever-changing menu. I'll also need to have a training with the sommelier and pastry chef. I admit to looking forward to these last two things very much. David introduces me to the rest of the waitstaff, making sure to leave out the part where I'm his baby cousin, as well as the chefs and sous chefs and the bartender, who happens to be there doing inventory. My brain is swimming with all the names and information, so I'm grateful when David turns and tells me to be here tomorrow night for the staff meeting and training, starting at 4. I'll be shadowing a waiter named Peter, and when David winks like, "Peter is cute," my stomach twists because I want to be with my cute man, the one who won me over with his wit and laugh and, yes, his biceps and collarbones. But I'm pissed at him, and maybe he's pissed at me, and for the life of me, I have no idea how this is going to shake down. David must see some reaction in my face, because he kisses the top of my head and says, "I've got you, honey." And I nearly break down in his arms,
Because whether it's luck or generations of effort and attention ensuring it, I have a truly amazing family. It's only noon by the time I'm back home, and it's depressing to register that I should be halfway into my second workday at Hamilton, meeting new colleagues, setting up accounts. But I admit there is a tiny glimmer in the back of my thoughts. It isn't relief, not exactly, but it's not altogether different from relief either. It's that I've accepted that it happened. I messed up. I was fired because of it. And that I'm actually okay with it. That thanks to my family, I have a job that can carry me as long as I need it to. And for the first time in my life, I can take the time to figure out what I want to do. As soon as I finished grad school, I did a short postdoc and then immediately entered the pharmaceutical industry, working as the liaison between the research scientists and medical doctors. I loved being able to translate the science to more clinical language, but I've never had a job that felt like joy either. Talking to Ethan about what he did made me feel like Dilbert in comparison. And why should I spend my entire life doing something that doesn't light me on fire like that? This fresh reminder of Ethan makes me groan, and although I know he's at work, I pull out my phone and send him a quick text. "I'll be home tonight if you want to come over." He replies within a few minutes. "I'll be there around 7. I know he isn't the most emotionally effusive guy, but the tone of his last 3 texts sends me into a weird panic spiral, like it's going to take more than a conversation to fix whatever is going on with us, even though I didn't do anything wrong. I have no idea what his perspective is on any of this. Of course, I hope that he believes me and that he apologizes for last night. But a tight lead ball in my stomach warns me that it might not go that way. Looking at my watch, I see that I have 7 hours until Ethan gets here. I clean, I grocery shop, I nap, I memorize the Camellia menu, I stress bake, and it only eats up 5 hours. Time is inching along. This day is going to last a decade. I can't call Amy and ramble about any of this, because I'm sure she's still not speaking to me. How long is she going to keep this up? Is it possible that she'll believe Dane indefinitely, and I'll have to eat my words even though, again, I haven't done anything wrong here? I put the menu down on my coffee table and sprawl on the carpet. The possibility that this rift between me and Amy could become permanent makes me lightheaded. It would probably be a good idea for me to hang out with someone for distraction, but Diego, Natalia, and Jules are all at work. Mom will only worry if she knows what's going on, and calling anyone else in my family will just result in 15 people showing up on my doorstep with sympathy dinner later, when Ethan and I are trying to hash things out. Thankfully, he doesn't make me wait. He comes over right at 7, holding takeout from Tibet Kitchen that smells so much more appealing than the pizza I'd ordered for us to share. "Hey," he says, and gives a little smile. He ducks, like he's going to kiss my lips, but then makes a detour at the last second, landing on my cheek instead. My heart drops. I step back, letting him in, and it suddenly feels too warm in my apartment. Everything seems too small. I look everywhere but at his face, because I know if I look at him and get the sense that things between us really aren't okay, I'm not going to be able to keep myself together for the conversation we need to have. It's so weird. He follows me into the kitchen, we make up plates of food, and then we sit on the floor in the living room, on opposite sides of the coffee table, facing each other. The silence feels like a huge bubble around me. For the past week, Ethan has practically lived here. Now it feels like we're strangers all over again. He pokes at his rice.
"You've barely looked at me since I got here."
The response to this dries up in my throat. "Because you kissed my cheek when you walked in. You didn't pull me against you or get lost in a long kiss with me. I feel like I barely had you, and now you're already gone." So instead of answering aloud, I look up at him for the first time and try to smile. He registers the failed effort, and it clearly makes him sad. An ache builds and expands in my throat until I'm honestly not sure I'll be able to get words around it. I hate this somber dynamic more than I hate the fact that we're fighting.
This is so weird, I say.
It would be so much easier to be snarky with each other. He nods, poking at his food.
I don't have the energy to be snarky.
Me either. I really just want to crawl across the floor and into his lap and have him tease me about my bra being too small, or how I couldn't stay away from him long enough to finish my dinner. But it's like Dane and his fratty face are just parked here in between us, keeping us from being normal.
I talked to Dane last night, he says right then, adding, late. I went over there late.
Amy didn't mention this. Did she even know that Ethan stopped by last night? And, I say quietly, I have no appetite and basically just push a piece of beef around the plate.
He was really surprised that that's how you took what he said, Ethan says.
Acid fills my stomach. What a shock. Ethan drops his fork and leans back on both hands, staring at me.
Look, what am I supposed to do? My girlfriend thinks my brother hit on her, and he says he didn't. Does it matter who is right here? You're both offended.
At this, I am incredulous. You're supposed to believe me, and it absolutely matters who's right here.
Olive, we've been together for like 2 weeks, he says helplessly.
It takes a few seconds for me to be able to unscramble the pile of words that falls into my thoughts.
I'm lying because our relationship is new?
Sighing, he reaches up, wiping one hand over his face.
Ethan, I say quietly. I know what I heard. He propositioned me. I can't just pretend like he didn't.
I just don't think he meant what you thought he did. I think you're primed to think the worst of him.
I blink back down to my plate. It would be so easy to choose to make peace with Ethan and Amy and just say, you know what? You're probably right, and just let it be. Because after all this, of course I'm primed to think the worst of Dane, and I could easily give him a wide berth for the rest of time. But I can't do that. There are too many red flags. Why am I the only one who can see them? It's not because I'm a pessimist or look for the worst in people. I know that isn't true about me. Not anymore. I fell for Ethan on that island, after all. I'm excited about a job at Camellia so that I have time to really think about what I want my life to look like. I'm trying to fix all the parts of me that aren't working because I know I have a choice in how my life goes. That it isn't all luck. But as soon as I try to be proactive, it's like no one wants to let me. And why isn't Dane here with Ethan, trying to make things right with me? Actually, I know why. He is so sure that no one will believe me, that everyone will think, oh, Olive is just being Olive, just believing the worst about everyone. My opinions are so inconsequential because in their eyes, I'm always going to be the pessimist.
Have you talked to Amy?
He asks. I feel the way heat crawls up my neck and across my face. The fact that my twin is on Ethan and Dane's side here is truly killing me. I can't even admit it out loud, so I just nod.
You told her about him dating other people before they were exclusive,
he asks. I nod again.
And about yesterday?
Yeah.
I thought you weren't going to say anything to her, he says, exasperated.
I gape at him. And I thought Dane wouldn't hit on his wife's sister. I guess we've both disappointed you. He stares at me for a long beat.
How did Amy take it?
My silence clues him in that Amy didn't believe me either.
She didn't know about the other women, Ethan. She thinks Dane has been committed since day one.
Ethan looks at me pityingly, and it makes me want to scream.
So you're not going to be able to move past this?
He asks. My jaw actually drops.
Which part? My sister's husband cheating on her before they were married? Your brother hitting on me?
Or my boyfriend not believing me about any of it. His gaze turns back to me, and he looks apologetic but unwavering.
Again, I don't believe his intent was what you think it was. I don't think he'd hit on you.
I let him hear the shock in my voice.
Then you're right, I say. I'll have a hard time moving past this.
When he leans forward, I think he's going to dig into his plate, but instead he pushes to stand.
I really like you,
he says quietly. He closes his eyes and drags a hand through his hair.
I am crazy about you, actually.
My heart twists painfully.
Then take a step back and look at this situation from a different angle, I plead. What do I have to gain from lying about Dane?
We've had so many disagreements, and they all seem so hilariously minor in hindsight. The cheese curds, the airplane, the Hamiltons, Sophie, the Skittle dress. I get it now, that all of those were opportunities for us to have contact with each other. This is the first time we've been at a true impasse, and I know what he's going to say before he even gets the words out.
I think we should probably break up, Olive. I'm sorry.
Chapter 19. It's the quiet before the dinner rush, and I'm doing the final check of my section. Natalia is the fourth family member this week to just happen to stop by Camellia at exactly 4 o'clock. She said she wanted to say hi to David because she hasn't seen him in forever. But I know that's bullshit because Diego, who came by yesterday to hassle me using a similarly flimsy story, said both David and Natalia were at Tia Maria's less than a week ago. As much as the size and presence of my family can feel oppressive at times, it's the greatest comfort I have right now. Even if I pretend to be annoyed that they're constantly checking up on me, they all see through it. Because if it were any of them struggling, and it has been, many times, I would find a reason to drop by at 4 o'clock wherever they work, too.
Mama, when we're sad, we eat, Natalia says, following me with a plate of food as I adjust the placement of 2 wine glasses on a table.
I know, I tell her, but I swear, I can't eat anymore.
You're starting to look like a bobble-headed Selena Gomez.
She pinches my waist.
I don't like it.
The family knows Ethan broke up with me, and that Amy and I are arguing, although there's nothing active about it. I called her a few times after our big blow-up, and 2 weeks later, she has yet to return any of my calls. In the past 10 days, I've been bombarded with well-meaning texts, and my fridge is completely packed with food that Mom brings daily from Tio Omar, Jimena, Natalia, Cami, Miguel, Tio Hugo, Stephanie, Tina, almost as if they've made a Feed Olive calendar. My family feeds people. It's what they do. Apparently, my missing Sunday dinner for 2 weeks in a row, because of work, has gotten the entire family on high alert, and it's driving them all crazy not knowing what's going on. I can't blame them. If Jules or Natalia or Diego went into hiding, I'd be out of my mind worried. But it isn't my story to share. I wouldn't know how to tell them what is happening. And according to Tio Hugo, who came by yesterday to, get a business card for an insurance agent from David, Amy won't talk about it either.
I saw Amy yesterday, Natalia says now, and then pauses long enough for me to stop fussing with the table settings and look up at her.
How is she? I can't help the tight lean to my words. I miss my sister so much, and it's wrecking me that she isn't speaking to me. It's like missing a limb. Every day I get so close to caving, to saying, "You're probably right. Dane didn't do anything wrong." But the words just won't come out, even when I test the lie out in front of the mirror. It sticks in my throat, and I get hot and tight all over and feel like I'm going to cry. Nothing all that terrible even happened to me, other than losing my job, my sister, and my boyfriend in a 24-hour period. But I still feel a kind of burning anger toward Dane, as if he slapped me with his own hand. Natalia shrugs and picks a piece of lint off my collar. She seemed stressed. She was asking me about someone named Trinity.
Trinity? I repeat, digging around in my thoughts to figure out why the name sounds familiar.
Apparently, Dane had a few texts from her, and Amy saw them on his phone.
I cover my mouth. Like sexy texts? I am both devastated and hopeful if this is true. I want Amy to believe me, but I'd rather be wrong about all of it than have her go through that pain.
I guess she just asked if he wanted to hang out, and Dane was like, "Nah, I'm busy." But Amy was pissed that he was texting a woman at all.
Oh my God. I think Trinity was the girl with the mango butt tattoo. Natalia grins.
I think I read that book.
This makes me laugh, and the sensation is like clearing away cobwebs from a dark corner of a room.
Ethan mentioned someone named Trinity.
I stop. I haven't told anyone in my family about what Ethan told me. I could try to blow Dane's entire cover story if I wanted, but what good would that do? I don't have any proof that he was seeing other women before he married Amy. I don't have any proof that he propositioned me in the bar. I just have my reputation as a pessimist, and I don't want my entire family looking at me the way Ethan did when he registered that even my twin sister thinks I'm making this all up.
She what?
Natalia presses when I've fallen quiet.
Never mind.
Okay, she says, fired up now.
What is going on? You and your sister are being so weird lately, and
I shake my head, feeling the tears pressing in from the back of my eyes. I can't do this before my shift.
I can't not. I just need you to be there for Amy, okay?
She nods without hesitation.
I don't know who Trinity is, I say, and take a deep breath. But I don't trust Dane at all anymore.
After midnight, I drag my bag from my locker in the back room and sling it over my shoulder. I don't even bother to look at my phone. Amy isn't texting, Ethan isn't calling, and there's nothing I can say in reply to the 40 other messages on my screen every time I look. But halfway to my car, it chimes. It's a brief flurry of bells and rotors and change falling. The sound of a jackpot. Amy's text tone. It's 10 below outside, and I'm in a black skirt and thin white button-down, but I stop where I am anyway and pull my phone from my bag. Amy has sent me a screen cap of Dane's text list, and there are the usual suspects, Amy and Ethan and some of Dane's friends, but there are also names like Cassie and Trinity and Julia. Amy's text says, "Is this what you were talking about?" I don't know how to answer. Of course, my gut tells me that those are all women Dane has slept with. But how would I know? They could be work colleagues. I bite my lip, typing with frigid fingers. I have no idea who they are. I don't have a list of names. If I did, I would have shown it to you. I wait for her to start typing again, but she doesn't. And I'm freezing, so I climb into my car and crank the heat as high as it will go. But about 3 blocks from my apartment complex, my phone chimes again, and I pull over with a sharp jerk of my steering wheel. Dane left his phone here yesterday. I spent like 2 hours trying to guess his passcode, and it's fucking 1111. I bite back a laugh and stare at the screen hungrily. She's still typing. I sent myself all the screenshots. All the messages from these women are asking the same thing, whether Dane wants to hang out. Is that code for a booty call? I blink at the screen. Is she serious? Amy, you know what I think already. Ollie, what if you were right? What if he's cheating on me? What if he's been cheating on me this whole time? A fracture forms right down the middle of my heart. Half of it belongs to my sister, for what she's about to go through. The other half will always keep beating for myself, even when no one else will.
I'm sorry, Amy. I wish I knew what to say. Should I answer one of the texts? I stare at the screen for a beat. On his phone? As Dane? Yes. I mean, you could, if you don't think you'll get an honest answer from him. I wait. My heart is in my throat, clawing its way up. I'm scared. I don't want to be right about this. I know, honey. For what it's worth, I don't either. I'm going to do it tonight. I take a deep breath, close my eyes, and let it out slowly. Somehow, being believed at last doesn't feel nearly as good as I'd hoped it would. I'm here if you need me. Although I'd had 2 months of unemployment not too long ago, I spent most of that time hunting for jobs or helping Amy prepare for the wedding. So now, keeping busy during the day has become so much more important. Because if I don't, I think about Ethan, or Amy. I don't hear from her the entire next day, and there's a knot in my stomach the size of Texas. I want to know how